The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. I promised myself today that I wouldn't start the show by saying there's a lot going on, but there really is a lot going on. Later on in the program, Tyler Miller will be talking about what it's like within that bubble. The Minnesota United goalkeeper, very, very candid in what he had to say. We'll also be hearing once again from Stefano Fasaro and Hercules Gomez reacting to the news that there have been more positive tests in Orlando looking ahead to the MLS's back tournament. Also, Ali and Frank will be joining me later on to talk about Real Madrid's 1-0 victory over Getafe and whether or not that the winning penalty should have been given. Shaka Hislop here waxing lyrical about Atalanta. 11 games in a row now they've won after a big 2-0 victory over Napoli today. But we'll start in the Premier League and Manchester City's 4-0 demolition of Liverpool. Craig Burley, Stevie Nicol and Ian Dart with me. Stevie, big deal?
No. Listen, I'm not going to say it's not disappointing and it is deflating, but it's not a big deal. And really, should we be surprised? You know, Liverpool were on a hiding to nothing anyway, and they were playing against a great team. And they just got outplayed, but you know what? After the next game when they won, it'll all be forgotten.
Craig, I saw you on Twitter talking about how this has taken the shine off slightly the title.
Yeah, I was trying to encourage those idiots that were suggesting that to sort of go away and hide under a rock. Look, Liverpool for 15, 20 minutes were the Liverpool that we've come to admire. But then I just think they got to the stage, they thought, do you know what, subconsciously, it doesn't really matter. And in the big scheme of things, it doesn't for them. And in some sense, from a professional standpoint, as Stevie mentioned, you don't ever want to have that happen as a player. But when you've got the league wrapped up as early as you have, then subconsciously, and listen, they've been having the beers, let's not kid ourselves, they've been celebrating in some way during this sort of lockdown social distancing, they've still managed to enjoy this, and so the preparation has been affected as well. On top of that, you know, we know City are a great side, we know where City's problems are, Dan. The City's problems have been the catastrophic mistakes they've made defensively. They can open up any team in Europe, never mind a team that for 7 days has been celebrating winning the league.
You agree, Ian?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a guard of honour formed by the Manchester City players for Liverpool, and quite rightly too, but that was all they were going to give them tonight. I think they wanted to just make a little point to Liverpool, but it is only a little point. And my reflection watching that was, it felt unreal. It felt like a friendly. It didn't have the intensity, really, of a Manchester City-Liverpool game as we understand it. In the end, it didn't really matter. I mean, Liverpool picked a full-strength team. They wouldn't have wanted anything like that to happen, but it did. And all I can say, really, is that that Liverpool party must have been a heck of a lot better than we all thought, because the defenders in particular looked like they had double vision.
Stevie?
Ian, can we just clarify that you're not broadcasting this part of the show from inside a shower cubicle?
It looks like there are particularly fetching curtains from my living room.
Oh, my goodness.
But I'm awaiting the torrent of criticism of the decor.
If Mrs. Dark appears from behind those curtains, we will cut away very quickly.
She won't. No, she really won't. I promise you. Steve, I can arrange it.
Stevie, you must... How did we get there? Stevie, you must have been in a situation before where you've won the title and having to kind of go through the motions. It must be weird.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind was way back, 82, 83. Liverpool had wrapped the title up. We were like four games to go. And of course, I've just joined the team and I'm trying to get in it. So I'm all on edge and I'm concentrated. And this same team that completely dominated that year, finished the season with like three defeats or two defeats and two draws and didn't score any goals and just was a shell of what had been previously. And these were experienced international players who'd been through the ringer, who knew what it was all about. And it didn't really matter that much. There was no edge. There was no edge with the coaching staff. And so, particularly me, I shouldn't have been surprised.
It didn't really matter in the end, but I'm intrigued to get your thoughts on the penalty, Stevie. Did you think it was the right decision?
Listen, I can see why the referee gave it, because Gomez's arm was across the front and had a hold of Sterling, no question. The problem I have is that in the same tussle they were having, Sterling had half of Gomez's shirt and his left hand holding him off. So that's the only thing that annoys me. I can see why it was given. I didn't like the little dive either, by the way. I don't see how you can dive when somebody's holding onto your belly button. But I can see why it was given. And as I said previously, the truth is, the title's wrapped up. So why get bent out of shape about it? So I didn't.
Oh, God, I'm pleased about that, Steve. I think just about, Stevie thought it was a penalty. Craig, you agree?
Yeah, I think it was because of the poor position Gomez got himself in, then the continuation of the arm across the body. He did then theatrically go down, but I think the referee was just about to award the decision anyway at that point. So it was just another one of the poor decisions that many of the Liverpool players made that they haven't really been making all season. And I think that about sums it up. You know, we saw Andy Robertson charging about and making decisions he hasn't made all year. We saw Manny, you know, a couple of times, you know, clearly through with like an opportunity, and he never even controlled the ball. He never even got a touch on one of them. So these kind of things are unheard of. On top of that, we should remember that Man City have a hell of a lot to play for still this season. They're playing for the places in the team. They are the favourites to win the Champions League. And so when you go there, can you half-baked and half-hearted? Don't be surprised if they give you a bit of a thumping.
I don't really know what else to say about this game, Ian. You got anything? Phil Foden, obviously good.
The bottom line is, this win tonight has cut the gap between Liverpool and Manchester City to 20 points. That's the big picture, really. Somehow this season, for all their talent, for all their brilliant technical play, Manchester City contrived to lose 8 Premier League games. Going into tonight, Liverpool, of course, had only lost 1. Now it's 2. But there's no doubt who the best side was this season. It was Liverpool. And I think, really, what happened tonight will be looked at just as a postscript when all is said and done.
Has Kevin De Bruyne been the best player, though, Stevie?
Difficult to... Are you talking about the season?
Yes.
Are you talking about this game?
No, the season.
Wow. Listen, I think he's up there in a group of Van Dijk, Mane and Henderson. I think he's in a group with them. But I don't think he did enough. I think he's just going to get pipped by one of the other three because of how great they all were and how great the team was.
I think you know, as you know, De Bruyne had some injury problems towards the start of the season. I think it's hard to look past some, you know, a Liverpool player when you're looking at it. And I think somebody who's made the biggest difference for me at key times has been Sadio Mane. Jordan Henderson's been fantastically consistent, but I think Liverpool have leaned on Mane quite a lot, and he has rarely failed to deliver. And I think you could put a strong argument in front of you that said he's been the best player this season, but it's a close one.
OK, let's move on to the earlier game, shall we? Sheffield United taking on Spurs. Sheffield United winning by 3-1. It was 1-0 when Harry Kane looked like he equalised. However, Vartel took a look and there was a handball in the build-up. It was the right decision if you're going by the letter of the law, Ian. A lot of outrage about this. But really, can you blame the officials? They were just adhering to the rules, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they had to actually give that on under the letter of the law, as you say, Dan, because there was a handball. And of course, the ruling is that if it's accidental or deliberate, it doesn't matter which, in the build up to the goal, then it has to be disallowed. But, you know, for crying out loud, we've got to get to a point where some common sense applies here. It was pretty clear, although it wasn't given, that Lucas Moura was fouled. That's the only reason he was on the floor and the ball hit his hand. The goal should have stood by reasons of common sense, but they were unable to apply the common sense. So that's another thing they've got to look at, really, the international board who decide the laws of the game.
Craig, what did you make of it all?
Drives me nuts. Honestly, drives me nuts, because here we have a scenario where Lucas Moura running at pace, and we know he's quick, he's fouled. He's heading to the ground, he's heading to the deck super fast. The arm comes out as it does. I don't deny it, the ball comes off his hand arm accidentally, either by putting it out or when it was kicked against him. But the ball's then smashed against him by an opposition player, as we know. Kane scores, and the result is a free kick to Sheffield United. I mean, even that was wrong, because the result should have been a free kick to Tottenham, because there was no advantage gained. But to Ian's point, the people that are setting these IFAB meetings have to have a real think about further down the line when they're making these laws up. Because, you know, if a player accidentally strikes the ball with the arm on his own and gains an advantage, I understand that. But when the ball is fired at you, you know, from a yard and a half away, and you can do absolutely nothing about it, and all you're doing is going to ground from a push, then that has to rewrite. They have to rewrite that law, because that advantage wasn't gained by the player. And it's just crazy. And I understand the frustrations, but they're going to have to find a way in this summer. It's going to be a short summer, as we know, for the football season, to find a way to get some clarification, better clarification, around these stupid, horrendously stupid laws around accidental handball.
This law was introduced after the Llorente handball in the Champions League last season, of course, which went for Spurs. Stevie, what do you think?
I'll be honest, I'm a little conflicted here, because, you know, we kind of complain, and we've been complaining for years about how rules are down to interpretation. And when it's down to interpretation, it can go all sorts of ways. The one thing I like about this rule is it's really clear. You can't interpret it. It's plain, it's simple, and it's in your face. Now, you can dislike it. And in every rule, there's going to be a situation where it kind of, it goes in the face of the law. And this is one of those. But this is one small one, in my opinion. I think the clearer the laws are, and they're not all going to be loved by everybody, but if it's clear and we all know the rules, then you have to go with the rules and abide by them. So in some ways it's good. I can see how a lot of people hate it, but for me, I'm not against it particularly.
Away from that incident, Spurs were terrible. After that goal was disallowed, Sheffield United kicking on to win the game convincingly. This is what Jose Mourinho had to say about the second half performance in particular. You have to be ready to cope with negative moments and go to the last minute. Now I know more the profile of my players. I felt it. I feared that in the second half we wouldn't be strong enough to cope. Craig.
Well, if he's feeling that, then he's got bigger problems than even he thought when he first put his big toe through the door of that training ground, because he's made some decisions, and one of those decisions is a partnership of Sanchez and Eric Dier. Now, I don't see Eric Dier as a midfield player, although he's played there, he's played well there at times, but I don't see him consistently as a midfielder because I don't think he's mobile enough. And on recent performances, I don't see him as a centre-half either. So I think he's got some big issues there, Mourinho. He's got a back four that'll get you the sack. And its current climate, that back four will get you the sack. And they're making bad decisions, but hey, they've hired this man. They're not going to have a big budget in the summer. They've got some decent attacking players. They've got some talented players. And it's up to him to mould them into a side that can be better than what they are. Listen, what happened to the Jose Mourinho comes to the club and automatically we're more organised and we're better defensively and we're hard to beat? Where is it? We're not seeing it.
They're hard to watch, Stevie, as well at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Craig said when he put his toe through the door, I'll tell you what he did was he followed with his big mouth and said, I like these players. These are a lot of these players I wanted. And seven months later, is it? He's saying, oh, I'm just finding out about these players. I mean, I'm sorry. sometimes you've got to keep it closed. And he's talking with, he's talking himself into the players having mutiny, like Manchester United. He's thrown them under the bus completely, saying, basically saying they're gutless and they're not strong mentally. I mean, you've got talented players, and as a coach, when you take over a side, you get a job because they need organising and they need to restart. And he hasn't done any of that since he went there. Tottenham Hotspur played no different to the first day he was in there to today's defeat against a team in Sheffield United who, for talent, can't match Tottenham's starting 11, but for organisation, for heart, for mentality, for every other thing, they absolutely cover them.
I really enjoyed that dramatic pause we got there from Stevie, Dan, but I was at the end of it hoping for a bit bigger and better word than mutiny.
I can't answer. We got there in the end. Ian, if I'm a Spurs fan, I'm finding it very difficult to find anything positive to look forward to at the moment.
Well, you've heard about the defensive problems from Craig and Stevie, but what about the attacking work tonight? I don't think Henderson, the goalkeeper, had a save to make. I think they had 70% of the ball, Spurs, but you could have read a book in the time it took them to develop an attack tonight. They were slow, they were slow-witted. The defence you've heard about, the marking was shocking. They were ball-watching, they were switching off. It was an absolutely shocking performance from them. And Jose Mourinho, talking about the players, he picked them. He's left Toby Alderweireld, who's probably the best defender they've got on the books, on the bench. Never got on. So Jose Mourinho has to address that. They look like they're going backwards, frankly, to me, Tottenham. I thought Sheffield United were right back to what they were before the lockdown. They were absolutely terrific, and they had a few players out injured as well, and they're right back in European contention.
Well, Toby Alderweireld was a player he wanted at Man United, Ian, as you well know, so that's another one to Stevie's point about players that he either wanted to sign or said he knew they were very, very good before he got there. Listen, let's get to the big picture here. And he trotted out the Harry Kane stats and the stats for other players that played under him over the years a week or two ago. If Tottenham Hotspur don't make any European football at all, and that's looking at a huge possibility at the moment, the way they're playing, how do you sell it to one of the best and most sought-after strikers in European football, who's at an age and coming off an injury-hit season, who's at an age where he's going to have to make some big decisions? Because you got to make hay while the sun shines, Dan, and other people come up the ladder, and all of a sudden you're not the flavour of the month anymore. So that would be the worry. And Tottenham fans can come on here and say to me, "Oh, Harry wants to stay at Tottenham. Harry wants to do this. Harry wants to do that." Harry doesn't want to be just above mid-table mediocrity, and that's where they are at the moment. That's a big concern for Tottenham Hotspur. How do you sell this project, if you want to call it that, to one of the best strikers in world football who could walk into most other teams? Major, major problem, along with the manager, that is, for Tottenham Hotspur.
Why would he want to stay, Stevie? Surely he's just seen everything that's transpired over the last few months under Jose Mourinho, and you've got to almost question his ambition if he does stay at Spurs.
Yeah, I can't think of a reason why. And I think, you know, had he been at another club, let's say a Man City, who have money, or a Man United even, who have money, then you can convince yourself, if you're a homeboy, that they can spend money and revamp this team. The truth is, Levy's not going to do that. He's going to try and get bargains, as they've done over the last 5-6 years. And it's served them well to a point, but that catches up with you. And it's catching up with them right now, because they can't revamp this team. I don't believe they've got enough money to do it. And so why would Harry Kane want to stay? I can't think of any reason whatsoever.
And even when they've spent money, they've spent it badly. Ndombele has had an absolute nightmare. That's been a complete bust. Of course, Spurs spending a lot of money on him last summer, Ian. This club is in complete and utter disarray at the moment.
It seems like that, doesn't it? And they're falling further and further behind in the race for a European place next season. And the guys are right. I don't think they've got a lot of money to spend, and Daniel Levy is notoriously miserly when it comes to doing the deals. And that is a very good point that Craig makes, I think, about Harry Kane, who is a Spurs boy. He's part of that club. They brought him through, and he wouldn't want to just leave them in the lurch. But there comes a point in his career where he will start to get a bit restless if they can't even offer him any European football to go with his obvious talent. So that is a watch this space situation, I think.
Right then, Ian, thank you very much. You can go and have a shower now, but you will be back for extra time. Just a reminder, lots of stuff on the website looking at Liverpool winning the title, including a fascinating article by Mark Ogden talking about the rebirth under Jurgen Klopp.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Real Madrid stretched their lead to the top of La Liga table to 4 points after a 1-0 victory over Getafe today. Ali and Frank alongside me to talk about this. Ali, this wasn't exactly a performance of champions today.
Well, I disagree with that, Dan. I think this is a performance of a team that knows what it takes and what it is required to beat Getafe. So I think Real Madrid realized very early on that this was not the sort of game in which they were just going to be able to pass the ball around and display all their talent, and they were going to be explosive in the attack. That was not going to be the case because Getafe does not lend themselves to do that out on the field. They're going to make it about 50-50 challenges and duels and second balls and physicality and grinding out a result. And Real Madrid said, well, all right, well, if that's the way that we're going to have to play this game, then so be it. We're not going to be able to play through them, so therefore we're going to have to fight with them. And it shows the flexibility of a team that can win games by outplaying somebody, but can also win games by outfighting somebody. And while it is not sexy, it is not entertaining, it's not pretty to watch, it's not what you would expect from Real Madrid or a champion team like Real Madrid, but in the end, it's effective, it's efficient, it's pragmatic. It's practical. It's everything that this team has been over the course of the season, and certainly since the restart. They've done just enough to win games, just enough to get 3 points, but that's far better than whatever Barcelona is doing. Barcelona's throwing away points. Real Madrid continues to get 3 points at a time.
Do you agree, Frank? Maybe I should give Real Madrid more credit for this win?
Yes, definitely, because I was very worried watching the game to see if they could find the key of the game and score one goal to win that game and get the 3 points. And I agree with Ali. It wasn't nice, that's for sure, but it was effective. They did what they had to do to find a way and get the 3 points. But you know, you need to be two to tango, and Getafe did everything they had to do to frustrate Real Madrid, to make them clumsy, to make them sloppy at some point. But at the end of the day, Madrid found a way again to get the win and do well and carry on, you know, getting points and points and maybe becoming the champion. But you need some time to get dirty and to work hard to win games. And it's not because you're at Madrid full of stars that you is going to be pretty every game you're going to play week in, week out.
Penalty for you, Frank?
I would say yes, because we are used to see that. I just have a question. Who creates the contact? Is it
Cavral, or is it the defender? I think it was maybe Damien. But I think it's more Cavral going towards the defender's leg. But because we saw that and it becomes a kind of habit, because it's in the 16-yard box and because there is a contact, the ref will easily give a penalty. But what happened to Cavral, who at least twice in the first half pushed from the opponent back, the two players, and had no penalty against him. I wonder, you know, I think he made laugh the coach of Getafe as well.
Yeah, there were a couple of calls, weren't there, in the first half. Maybe Getafe could have had the penalties. The penalty that was awarded, Ali, do you agree? I suppose once the defender dangles that leg, Carvajal is going to make the most of it.
See, what happens is Carvajal has so much time and space on the right-hand side on that counter-attack by Real Madrid, that I think Oliveira, the defender who ends up committing the foul, I believe he's anticipating that a cross is coming. And as Carvajal takes that last touch, the touch actually gets away from him. And Oliveira thinks, well, maybe I can get to this. But he was already late to the play. And by him anticipating a cross that never came and then trying to react to a bad touch by Carvajal, he gets there late. Carvajal cuts him back. And then there is no other recourse for the referee, but to see a leg that is, yes, as you just mentioned, is dangling, Carvajal goes down, and clearly then 100% a penalty.
Meanwhile, the talk in Barcelona continues to be about Quique Setién and Antoine Griezmann. Setién, of course, coming out after that draw against Atleti, say that he didn't play him more because he destabilizes the team. Frank, we also heard then Griezmann's family taking to Instagram to talk about Setién. I'm just intrigued to what the reaction in France has been overall with regards to Griezmann, Barcelona and Setién.
Well, we found the comment of the coach completely stupid, because if Griezmann coming in could destabilize, you know, the team, why you bought him? You knew that you will have a problem. You knew that Griezmann is the type of player who can be either as a striker, meaning on Suarez's place, or as a number 10 like Messi. So why do you pick him? So it's hard to put him on the left side where you need somebody very fast, like you had in sometimes, like Neymar, like Dembele, but not at all Griezmann. The comment of the father has been criticized as well. It's because he wanted him to come to, he wanted his son to go to Barcelona and pushed it. And now we just face where everybody has to be blamed, in fact. Griezmann first, because he decided to go to Barcelona, where he shouldn't, for sure. Quique Setién, because I think he's not the right coach for that type of team, because of Messi dealing with all the thing in the dressing room. And Barcelona, because they bought Griezmann. That was a real mistake. And now they try to deal with it. But there is only one issue. Is for Griezmann to go next summer for next season.
Frank, thank you very much. Sid Lowe will be joining us on the next edition of the show to give us more insights on what's going on in Catalonia. But for now, thanks, Frank and Ali. We'll be back tomorrow for more. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Meanwhile, in Italy, a very good day to be an Atalanta fan as they beat Napoli by 2-0. Roma, meanwhile, losing against Udinese, meaning that Atalanta all but guaranteed then a place in the Champions League next season. Shaq and Hislop with me to reflect on that win. This is 11 games now, Shaka, in a row that they've won, and they were brilliant again today.
Yeah, they were again, well, the second half, they were brilliant. This was a really weird game, Dan. The first half, Atalanta, despite how many goals they continue to score, leading Serie A in that regard, they almost didn't seem interested in attack. And it was really odd, the first half. And then all of a sudden, come the second half, they get the opening goal and the game just opens up. Napoli have to go at Atalanta, try to get something out of the game. And Atalanta were then, for me, at their brilliant best. They defended resolutely, looked very good on the counter-attack, as they always had been. The only criticism about that is where was all that in the first 45? But tactically and overall, they got this absolutely right.
But you look at the teams that they've beaten in this run, quite incredible. Napoli being the latest. Napoli, first half, okay, second half, obviously they'd be disappointed with their performance.
Yeah, listen, Napoli, I thought, had to get a goal in the first half if they were to win this. And that's exactly how it played out. They dominated possession without really creating a whole lot of chances to Atalanta's credit in that first 45, despite my criticism of them. And once Napoli showed that they threw everything but the kitchen sink at Atalanta and they stood up to that test, Atalanta knew that the game was there for the taking. A rather easy opening goal, Napoli trying to play the ball out of the back, get dispossessed and then find themselves all at sea with everybody desperately out of position. And then, as I say, the game was all Atalanta's. Napoli only have themselves to blame, and Atalanta just continue to go from strength to strength, it seems. Even on the back of last season, where you kind of thought that this bubble would burst. And then, is the Champions League bubble going to burst for them? Is it too much for them? And they continue to astound.
How strong could they get, though, Shaka? 20-1 to win the Champions League. They're in the quarterfinals. 3 wins, and they are the kings of Europe. Worth a bet?
Yeah, a long shot bet at that. And then listen, I understand the skepticism around Atalanta, just given how poor defensively they have been and that their general style of play is to just go out and outscore the opposition. But on today's showing, where, again, as good as they were in the first half in particular, and as resolute as they were when once the game opened up, maybe, just maybe, they can get it done. Am I going to put my money there? No. But if you give me a tenner, Dan, I might just.
Why would I do that in my life? Why would I give you the tenner to put the bet on?
Well, it's worth a bet. You never know what we could win here, Dan.
Well, we know exactly what we could win, $200.
Yeah, and we split it. How about that?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, right, Shaka. I believe that. Why would I split it with you anyway? It's going to be fascinating to see how they kick on in August. Shaka, thank you very much. Serie A continues this weekend. Juventus against Torino, Sassuolo, Lecce, and Lazio against AC Milan. That's the 3 games for you on ESPN+. Follow up on Sunday, Inter taking on Bologna, Napoli against Roma, the late game for Atalanta. They're away looking to continue this fine run against Cagliari. Not long now until the MLS is back. Tournament kicks off in Florida. Jeff Carlisle and Stefano Fazzaro have gone inside the bubble. They've written an article about it. You can check it out over on the website. Well, Stefano is with us now. Also is Hercules Gomez. Stefano, I want to start with you first. What's the latest?
Well, unfortunately, we had another positive test confirmed this morning. And that is for the Columbus crew. Now, the entire traveling party of the Columbus crew received testing this morning, and now they are quarantined until they receive those tests later tonight. And look, there is a lot of concern from players that are already embedded in this bubble. And we spoke to Minnesota United goalkeeper Tyler Miller, who kind of expressed some of that concern.
It's been challenging, to be honest. There's a lot of uncertainty. Every day we wake up and we're not sure what's going to happen. We don't know whether there's going to be a case on our team. There's going to be other cases on people that we've been in contact with. So trying to manage that mentally, I think it is very challenging for a lot of guys that I've spoken to from around the league here. So we're really just trying to be as safe as we can here. But at the same time, we understand that we're in this secluded environment that is supposed to be safe for us, but now there are a handful of cases here, and there's only 6 or 7 teams here. So we're really unsure what's going to happen when all 26 teams do get here, and we actually have every single person in MLS here.
Uncertainty is the word, the key word there that he mentioned. Now, we're up to 10 players that have tested positive and one coach, and that's in between FC Dallas and the Columbus Crew. But I will give MLS credit where credit is due. They are being pretty transparent with the data of these tests and all the tests that are happening here inside the bubble every other day with a release and showing us that data. So they are being transparent, but still, we're seeing the issue so early on, and it is concerning.
Hercules Gomez with us as well. Herc, look, this is a very fluid situation. You know, MLS are trying to work this out as it goes. I know they've taken a beating from a lot of people over the last few days. But to be fair, they weren't really to know that this was going to happen.
No. Yes and no. I mean, no, because you can't predict this type of thing. But you're also going into an epicenter of what is this virus in the United States. You know, it's not the most controlled environment in Florida, let alone in Orlando. This is why these teams, these Major League Soccer teams who are not there right now, are delaying their departures to get into Orlando. Greg Vanney himself said he expected more of a controlled environment, and that's why they want to control what they can right now in Toronto. It's a scary situation, no way, no matter how you slice it. These players, Tyler Miller talked about the uncertainty, and I thought he spoke very well. A lot of these players are uncertain about their situations within their own teams, let alone other teams. I mean, these teams, these players, they travel together, they dine together, they train together, and they also share a weight room with two other Major League Soccer teams. You're bound to come in contact with other players from other teams. The uncertainty of it all is a scary thing, and I understand Major League Soccer is taking a beating, and they're doing the proper testing. They're going to be tested every single day, these players who have been exposed, testing every other day for the ones who don't come up positive. So it is a very fluid situation, but it is what it is at this point, and we can't ignore that they're in an epicenter of what is this virus.
Are we anywhere near MLS addressing maybe looking to reschedule this tournament, Stefano?
From everything I've been told, the MLS is moving forward with this tournament, and there are no discussions to cancel it or to postpone it as of now. But we know that that's very fluid, and really the data is what's going to determine whether that's the next step or not.
It seems to be, meanwhile, Herc, and I know you put this out on Twitter, if you earn enough money in MLS, you're going to find any excuse not to go to this tournament.
Yeah, and it's complicated. I think you're alluding to Carlos Vela. Listen, there are two reasons you can opt out of this tournament. One is a medical exemption if you have a pre-existing medical condition. The other is if your partner is pregnant, which Carlos Vela's partner is pregnant pretty far along, so that falls into that category. But if you're Carlos Vela, who, by the way, opted not to play in a World Cup for Mexico for different reasons, but if you gave up a World Cup and that wasn't maybe important to you, you didn't want to do it, and your wife is pregnant, and you've banked over $15 million in 2.5 seasons, 2 seasons because you've had 2 weeks this season, what incentive do you really have to go? Most players don't have that luxury. Most players don't collect the check that Carlos Vela collects. They almost feel like they have to go or they will be docked pay. It is what it is. It's Major League Soccer. It's a very strange situation where you have a guy who's making $6.5 million play with a guy who's making $74,000. It's a very difficult situation for these players, but it almost seems like certain players have the luxury of deciding if they want to or not.
Would you go, huh?
If my wife was pregnant, no, I probably would not go. It's a 6-week, 5-6-week tournament, 35 days, I believe. I don't think you get as much out of it if you're a player like Carlos Vela than what you could potentially lose. Other players don't have that luxury. There are different, I guess, ends of the spectrum in this Major League Soccer bubble, and I'm talking about in general in the league and the player and the pay scale. It's a luxurious choice one can make. I wouldn't have gone.
Stefano, obviously teams, just give us what's going to happen over the next 48, 72 hours. More teams will be arriving.
Yeah, more teams will be arriving, and that's exactly what Tyler Miller was alluding to in that soundbite just a few minutes ago, that this is only happening with six or seven teams here. We just saw the New England Revolution arrive a few minutes after that interview. It's going to continue, and that's what the uncertainty is about, right? Nobody is sure whether these tests will be stopped here, but you have so many people coming from the outside in the next 48, 72 hours, that's the biggest uncertainty and concern. Will they get here? And when they get here, will they test positive? And I think that if they test positive right off the bat when they arrive here, they can be immediately quarantined. They have to quarantine anyway when they arrive for 12 hours until those test results come back. And that's almost more positive than having somebody test positive on their second or third COVID test while they're here in the bubble. And that's kind of what they're looking out for.
Stefan, I'm so pleased it's you having to explain all of that and not me. Thank you very much, mate. Stay safe. Changing gears slightly, Herc, we saw Jürgen Damm announce his latest addition to the Atlanta United squad. His dancing was quite interesting. Is that a good word to use? He looked very happy.
That is a very good word to use. He's a very interesting player, interesting person. Listen, in Jürgen Damm, you get a player with tons of personality. He's a hilarious kid, but he's also a pretty good player. Oftentimes, the criticism with Jürgen Damm is that in product, in his time, he was the most expensive in-house transfer in what is Liga MX. He's over $10 million for his services from Pachuca to Tigres. He's a player that has a ton of pace, very good controlling the ball into said space, taking advantage of open space, but it's that in product. That service into the forward, that decision-making in the final third, that it's always eluded him. But he's a very, very interesting player. This kid's fast. He's electric. In his time, I believe there was only one other player faster than him, I should say, in what is all of the soccer in the world in FIFA, and that was Gareth Bale. He's one of the fastest players you will ever see, but it's about what he does with that speed in the final third that will really dictate how this goes for him in Atlanta.
But he won't be going to Orlando, no hurt.
No, not. He doesn't have the visa clearance as of yet. He will be available, I believe, from what he has said, he will train within a reserve system until then, and then he will be made available after this tournament, as most international transfers coming in, like Gonzalez Pires, who is now with Miami.
Hercules Gomez, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder then, the MLS is Back tournament kicks off on July the 8th, and it's a doubleheader for you on ESPN. It's Orlando City against Inter Miami, that game at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, immediately followed by Nashville against Chicago Fire. Before that, though, it's the German Cup final live on Saturday, 1:55 Eastern on ESPN2, Bayer Leverkusen taking on Bayern Munich.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Frank, to Ali, and to Stevie Nicol. If you want to see more, though, of Ian Dark's shower curtain, fear not. He's with me on Extra Time with Craig Burley next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Craig and Ian with us. In case you didn't see the show, we confirm that is not Ian's shower curtain. He's not sat on the toilet doing this. This extra time today. This is your living room, yeah, Ian?
It really is my living room, and I'm going to have a word with my wife about the curtains, I think, because they've taken some terrible, terrible stick tonight on this show.
Okay, then. Should Liverpool take the last few games of the Premier League seriously? Based off of today, it seems like they aren't. It's not their prerogative, is it, Craig?
I think they are taking it seriously, as serious as possible in the circumstances of their historic league win. But I think subconsciously, as a player, when you know there's nothing on the line, really, and there isn't for them, then the performance drops. And it only has to drop, you know, 10, 15% at this level of football. And you'll get taken to the cleaners against the best sides. And that's what City are. They're one of the best. I dare say if Liverpool play like that against, you know, a bottom half team of the Premier League, it's probably not going to be an issue. But against Man City, who have still got cup competitions to play for, have still got the Champions League to play for, the FA Cup semi-finals, these guys are still playing for places. That's the big difference.
Ian, do you think Pep will trust Foden enough and not buy a replacement for David Silva?
I think he's got to, really, because he's really spoken a lot about how this is a special player, a special talent. He's the future of the club. And it is Phil Foden's time now. I think he's scored 4 goals in 3 starts since we had the resumption of the league. He looks the part now. I mean, David Silva, that's big boots to fill. He could never be David Silva, who's a wonderful, wonderful player. But he is a talent, and I think it's his time. And I think it would be depressing, really, if Pep went out into the marketplace and spent 60, 70 million on somebody else.
Ian, do you think go on, Craig.
Sorry, I think he could grow into a David Silva, which would be no mean feat because, as you know, like most people, I've been a huge fan. He has, you know, sort of 8 out of 10 most weeks, if it's not a 9 out of 10. But I think I heard somebody say, or I saw it somewhere, that Guardiola had already told the City board that, yeah, he needs money to spend and areas that are obvious, but they didn't have to rush out and worry about a replacement for David Silva because he had so much confidence in Phil Foden. So I don't think we'll see Manchester City spending the money in that area. I think there are too many other needs, which you know, I don't really need to highlight there in terms of the defensive problems. So I think he's so enthralled with Foden's progress that he's told the City board, look, we don't have to rush out and spend a fortune. As good as David Silva is, we've got other players here and a youngster that can come in, learn and do a job.
Ian, time to go through the memory banks. What's the biggest upset that you've ever witnessed while commentating a match and how did the fans react?
I'd have to go off the top of my head for that game I covered in the World Cup in 2014. Brazil 1, Germany 7. Brazil had never lost a competitive home game since 1975 before that. So that was a massive upset, even though the opposition were as good as Germany. Who'd have thought they'd rip them to shreds like that? I think they got 5 in 29 minutes at one stage of the game. So, yeah, I'd go for that one. I witnessed anyway.
Even on TV, that was bonkers. Every time you looked up, Germany had scored another goal. It was absolutely crazy. Craig, should Chelsea sign a centre-back?
Yeah, I mean, there is a good argument to say that, and not just off the back of the performance yesterday against West Ham, there is an argument to say that Rudiger needs a partner. Now, that might sound strange because Rudiger had one of his poorer games for Chelsea against West Ham, but I think ultimately he is their best defender and best centre-half. I don't know, you know, Christensen's not a bad player. Zuma is a player who is capable. A young Tomori is a talented young guy. It's just how much Frank Lampard worries about whoever's going to play alongside Rudiger, whether he thinks he needs to go out and buy another one. He's certainly going to be looking at a left-back, I believe. And obviously he's got his front man in Timo Werner. So the options there are sort of sewn up. I think there's an argument to say he'll be looking at a centre-back, but he's got 3 at least that can partner Rudiger. It's just whether he's got enough confidence in them to do the job. On last night's showing, I think it's doubtful.
How much does Sané improve Bayern, Ian?
Well, a bit, but I think he needs time to get up to speed again because he's been out of the game a long time, out of favour and injured and left out of the World Cup. So it'll take a little bit of time, I think, but if he gets back to his best, he's an asset for anybody.
And talk about a tweet right up your street, Craig. In honour of Liverpool's first half performance, any good stories of teammates playing hungover?
Ha ha ha. Well, at an end of season game, yes.
Yeah.
Actually, we went to Hong Kong and Thailand and around that whole area at the end of season with Chelsea 1 year. And I was convinced Ruud Gullit had left me out in the final only a few days before the FA Cup final. And we get to Hong Kong and we're partying like hell. And we're getting off the bus at the game and we're all still hungover. Most of us, some of us. And he names the teams we're coming off the bus and I'm only playing. And I'm warming up, right? I'm warming up on the pitch and some of the lads are sitting in the technical area, the dugout, the bench, whatever you call it nowadays, and they're absolutely killing themselves laughing at me. Because I'm all over the parish, honestly. And it was not a nice feeling at all. But I wasn't expecting to play, but it wasn't a competitive game.
Right.
As for a competitive game, I don't think so, although I'm sure it has happened. But I don't remember any of my teammates intentionally being hungover, because I don't really know many that would drink 24 hours before a game.
Ian, you would never commentate hungover, would you?
Never commentate, but going back, I mean, there was a huge booze culture. I mean, everybody knows that going back before the time Craig was playing. But, you know, go back to the 1960s, some teams used to have a little catchphrase like, win or lose, we're on the booze. They'd be playing away up in Blackburn or Blackpool, and they'd ordered crates of beer. They bought out whole off licenses full of beer to take on the train home. And would almost have to be carried off the train when they got back. So that was just part of the game then. Of course, I think it's much, much more professional now. And if you want to look back at some Christmas games way back when, have a look at the score lines and you'll understand that maybe not everybody was in tip-top condition.
Listen, don't let commentators tell you they're not having a bevy the night before a game, Dan. You know it, I know it.
I seem to remember a night out of the three of us. Do you not remember the three of us went out?
Yes.
And did you have a game after that night, Ian?
Funnily enough, no.
Oh.
If I did, I'm going to deny it here now.
Listen, I've had many a night out with commentators and colleagues the night before a game. In fact, I remember Champion saying to me in South Africa at the 2010 World Cup, because we were travelling around the country, as you know, Dan, doing games, and so we were going from pillar to post, and we'd always go out for a meal the night before or whatever it is day we arrived. And I remember him saying one night, Right, Craig, that very posh.
Yes.
Right, Craig, I think we've all had enough red wine tonight. We have a game tomorrow. And I says, we're commentating the game, John. We're not playing. Get another bottle of wine. You soft sod.
you've got to relax a little bit as well. I mean, if you're on a World Cup trip, Craig's right. Yeah, you're going to go and have a meal and you might have one wine too many.
Ian, it's all right, you're 16, you can drink, do what
you
want.
Here's a story for you. We was driving from somewhere in South Africa to Johannesburg because the flight was cancelled. And we had a right night out the night before. It might have been the red wine night, but I think it was another one. And, we couldn't stop. It was me, Champers, the sound engineer, the producer, and a couple of South African people that travelled with us for a month. And we enjoyed ourselves. So we overindulged that evening. And I remember the next day, Dan, I was hanging. No matter how many tablets I took, I couldn't get rid of the headache. But I had no game that day. I had 2 days off.
Right.
And we're in this minibus driving back to Johannesburg, which was the base for ITV. And I'm in the back, and it's like a small, like, 6 or 7-seater. And I'm on the back seat, and I'm lying down. And I'm like, 4 hour journey to Joburg, it's boiling hot and I'm hanging. And the phone rings and the producer, Mitch Price, picks it up and it's ITV HQ down in Joburg. And they're going, and I hear Mitch Price going, yeah, yeah, he's here. And he's looking behind him and he's going, yeah, he's here. Tonight? Oh, yeah, I'll tell him tonight. And I was like, somebody had gone down ill. And I was now getting told I had to go and do an off-tube commentary with Ian Crocker in Joburg that evening. and I was lying in the back of the van, and I couldn't even pick my head off the chair. That was horrible, mate. Horrible. So you shouldn't really, it's very unprofessional to drink before a game, but only if you play.
Only if you're playing. I remember the night when I tried to keep up with you and Steve McManaman when we went out. That was a big mistake.
That was when you called me a very bad name in a public place.
They had to do the show the next day and the lights have never felt hotter. My God.
But that wasn't the same. But that was also a different night when you tried to keep up with me on a different night, and then you spilt your drinks and the barman
came over to me
and said, I can't serve you guys anymore. I said, why? I'm having a great time. He says, your friend.
No, I was fine that night. That was just joking.
He's no friend of mine.
We should make it clear, guys, to all the viewers that are watching Extra Time tonight, that when we talk about drinking, we only mean lemonade, don't we?
Yep, that's it. Final point. Since a bubble environment is being created for the restart of MLS, NBA, etc., could the ESPN FC crew live together in a bubble for several months if required to continue the show? Who would suffer cabin fever first? Which person would most likely break the rules and sneak out?
Well, one thing we know is you know, it would be hard to control the sweating up in the paddock from Gab Marcotti. you know, that would be difficult. Well, Stevie would have to be sneaking out because clearly none of us are able to dish up a shepherd's pie.
Yes.
So, and other things.
Shaka sneaks out. Like when we go on trips, he disappears for like the whole night, and then he's just suddenly there for breakfast.
Dan, I think it'd be you. I think you'd be the one to break the lockdown, to break the bubble.
I don't know. Out of everyone,
you know this extrovert guy, you've got to be out there.
just Craig will kick me out. That'd be it. Who would enjoy it the most? I don't know.
Who would enjoy it the most?
Yeah.
Oh, but the journalists enjoy it the most.
Gab would. He would just be telling stories.
Yeah, yeah. They'd be telling stories, and you know, we'd be like, I can't say it. Be telling stories about leading his time in Japan or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Was,
yeah.
He'd have that jacket on that's got like 55 zip pockets.
What about Frank? Frank would start doing one-man plays for us. That could drive us completely crazy.
Oh, by the way, you'd have to get a muzzle for Frank. There's no doubt about it. I haven't spent a year at Chelsea with him. Frank would have to wire Frank's jaws together just to get him to shut up. I'm telling you.
I think that's where we're going to end today's Extra Time. As eclectic as ever. Thank you very much.
Robbo would have to get out to talk about wing-backs.
Oh,
can you
Robbo,
imagine?
Yeah.
Robbo, the wing-backs. Rob would be like, well, the wing backs.
Yeah, that's very true.
Don
would have to leave to get service to ring Frank Lampard. Frank?
Yeah, Don would get Lamparditis after a week or so.
He misses beloved Frank. That'd be it. Okay.
But at least what we could do, though, is if we wanted to partition ourselves from each other, Ian could bring the shower curtain material.
Yes, exactly.
Not
that's
a problem.
Good.
Yes, but you wouldn't have any problems with me because I've got a shower very handy.
You certainly do. Ian, you've got to pull it back just so we can see.
I don't think I can, actually.
Oh, it's a shower. Oh, there it is.
All it is, look, is the glass through to the conservatory. That's all it is. I mean, I'd like there was something more mysterious and interesting for you, but that's it. It's dark here. You know, I'm 5 hours different.
I just... I'd so love it if there's just
what
someone
there.
What
did you think was going to be behind the curtain, by the way?
Oh, it'd be brilliant if somebody was behind the curtain all this time. Right, that's good. We're done. Thank you very much, guys. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow.